In September 28th, actually, we see that Darwin has read the Reverend Thomas Malthus' essay on population. And he writes in pages which he, in fact, later excised and kept them specially to make sure he had in one easy-to-get-at place. This is a practice that he will do frequently throughout the notebooks. But these passages are super important because here he gets his theory of natural selection. In these passages, we get him taking the idea of Malthus that populations grow exponentially, reproduction can occur exponentially, but that their actual numbers of species that can be sustained in any environment is limited by the resources in the environment. And those resources, like, you know, simple real estate of land or food and air and light, are limited. They can be expanded, extended. Humans can make more land arable, but it gets more and more difficult. They can't be extended as fast as humans can reproduce or any organism can reproduce. Darwin suddenly realizes that that piece of political economy that he's reading in Malthus, and he will later say he read it for amusement, sets up a war of nature between organisms in one environment where resources are getting limited. And the war of nature is something that is a common theme in natural history at the time. Notice he references the great Swiss biologist de Candolle. But he says nobody has really brought it home the way that Malthus has and did not convey that increase of brutes must be prevented solely by positive checks, excepting that a famine may just stop desire. Malthus distinguishes between a positive check and a negative check, that these checks on reproduction, whether they are direct or indirect. And famine, he says, can actually have the effect of making organisms not reproduce. So it can become a positive check. So this shows he's deeply into reading of Malthus. That's what we can learn from that. But look what he makes of it. He says that population and increase at geometrical ratio in far shorter time than 25 years. He's referring to America, colonial America. Malthus said every 25 years that their population seems to have increased. Malthus is one of the first people to look at demography. And Darwin says, oh, you know, I can see this happening much faster than that. And he will say that there is 100,000 wedges that are set up by this struggle that is forcing species into the spaces in the economy of nature and thrusting out weaker ones. So what we have here is actually the concept of natural selection, that adaptation or making of new species is the result of this pressure in nature that selects between variations, between slightly different kinds. And what you have in this passage, interesting, is sort of the conclusion of the argument of natural selection, that this struggle that is set up by Malthusian pressure, population pressure, as we still call it, leads to adaptation. He sort of cools down a few weeks later and says and points out, that there are certain premises, like there has to be hereditary variation, that there is this population principle, that organisms are like their ancestors unless they show variation. Sets it out in a kind of logical structure and then refers back to these consequences. So actually, I think of this as this Malthus, first reading of Malthus passage, as you think of Darwin back in Brazil in the forest, in the rainforest, and his awe and the chaos of the mind is a chaos of delight, and in the future it will sort things out. This is what he sorted out. I always like to think of Darwin going through this period of his life as a graduate student. And the Beagle Voyage was learning how to work in the laboratory of biology, as it were. And when he gets back, he will try to work out this theory of evolution. Here he gets to the point where he knows he's got a thesis that will fly He actually says in his autobiography, "At last I had a theory by which to work." And the origin, of course, you consider his mature publication of his thesis, even though it took that many years to publish. However, he is a human being. He's got a life, and that intersects with this as well. He will marry his cousin, Emma Wedgwood, and we know that the courtship with Emma began a few weeks before he read this Malthus passage. So he had begun to get serious about marriage then. They have a little conversation, which is clearly, you know, sort of an exchange of views. It's possible that she even revealed her religious scruples to him. And this is the time when we believe that his father told him never talk to a woman about religion, because he and Emma are in different places. She's much more conventional. In fact, even evangelical by the standards of the time. However, look, he leaves Emma and comes back to London and almost immediately gets this thing that he's been struggling for. Now the guy, he's got bank money here. This is solid science. He's ready to get married. They almost intersect. And by 1839, he will be married. And it's curious. I mean, one might be curious about the word wedges in this passage, you know, 100,000 wedges. And he is marrying a Wedgwood. And maybe there's some sort of relationship. After all, this is about reproduction. She's going to bear his children. You know, his mother was also a Wedgwood. This is another case of clearly overdetermination in, you know, intellectual history and Darwin's intellectual growth, because we know that before he came to see Emma, he went to Edinburgh, revisit where he went to college, went to university as a medical student, and revisited a place called Salisbury Crags, where, as a student, he had described the use of wedges by workmen to pound into the rocks around Edinburgh to make material for roadbeds. And that's a wedge metaphor that's almost more directly connected to what he's talking about here, the 100,000 wedges pounding into the face of nature. Each of those wedges is like the wedges he had discussed in 1827. But he's got his notes with him when he goes, and then he goes to see Emma. And so why aren't, you know, overdetermined? These things could be mutually reinforcing.